And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation.
All your body Israel, Omerim Shema Israel.
The Eternal Life. The National Broadcasting Company and its independent affiliated stations make free time available to present The Eternal Life, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today, which marks the anniversary of the Balfour Declaration, we present The River Jordan, an original drama by Irv Tunick, with material drawn from the book entitled The River Jordan by Dr. Nelson Glick, president of Hebrew Union College. Alexander Scourby is featured as the narrator.
I have a quotation here, most pertinent. Please, let it be read.
It is with rivers as it is with people. The greatest are not always the most agreeable, nor the best to live with.
Statistics are easy. The Jordan runs 100 miles from head to toe and meanders once again that distance. Posed against the Mississippi, it is only a mill stream. Against the Amazon, it is only a rill. But in the blaze and glint of history, the Jordan rolls in flood, rinsing the land of Zion. Suckled by the snows of Hermon. And a tale is told well worth repeating. After the Lord had given the holy law to Israel from Mount Sinai, all the other mountains crinkled their cheeks in anger. Indignant, snubbed, their spokesman pleaded.
Why did you give the holy law from Mount Sinai and not from other mountains?
It was a fair question, demanding an unprejudiced answer. So the Lord commanded the mountains to set themselves in orderly rows, so that he could hear each one's plaint in order. With much tumbling and rumbling, and a good bit of grumbling, the mountains came to order. Morah, Ebal, Ephraim, Gerizim, Nebo, each in turn complaining. Last of all, a small lowly hill approached the throne. The Lord asked, What is thy name?
My name is Hermon. Why did you not give the Torah from me? At the borders of the Holy Land am I. From my feet flow the fountains of Jordan, which is so dear to you. Why was the Torah not given from me?
And the Lord smiled and summer was everywhere. And then he said, "Verily it would have been fitting that the holy law should be given from you. But since it was not, I give you another gift. I shall make you loftier than all the mountains of the land, and upon your highest portions shall eternal snow rest, and all the mountains shall envy you." And this is as it is. Hermon stands above the floor of Zion like a food-laden table on Shabbat, covered with a spotless cloth of eternal snow, with sunbeams for candelabra and cool springs for wine. Four streams are suckled by Hermon. Legend tells us these streams quarreled, just as the mountains quarreled. How human is nature! And called to the Lord of the universe to judge among them. The Lord of the universe descended to earth and pondered the matter. For the arguments were well advanced, and each stream had advocated its claim with wisdom. At length the Lord of the universe rose from the hill and counseled, "Rivers, you are dear to me all four. Hearken to my counsel. Unite all four, and together ye will indeed be the most important river in the world." And this was done, and the rivers clasped each other so firmly that none could tell their streams apart. And so was born the Jordan. Into Lake Pule. What have we here? Strange animals have come to Pule. Hungry anthropoids that gulp the clay and loam with skinny necks and iron bellies. Genus Milwaukee. Steam shovels for you. For here at Pule, a transformation has begun. Pioneers are mining a swamp, bringing out land. Here in miniature is the long, sad song of Zion. Once brilliantly fertile, a fecund valley, thickly populated, prosperous. Then centuries of overcultivation, wringing the land dry, squeezing out crops until the land bawled out in agony and gave up the ghost. Neglected, scorned, swampland and marshes boiling with malaria, the land of Hule lay for centuries untouched, unwanted. But now it is wanted. And now the magic touch of modern engineering is scraping off the scum of centuries for land, for men who want land, for people who have faith in land. They are mining at Hule, mining a swamp for land. Jordan sinks below sea level. Quite softly, as though on tiptoe, it enters Galilee, the fabulous Sea of Kinneret. Studding its shores like a necklace of emeralds are kibbutzim, Jewish communal villages, outposts of faith in the wilderness. Here is Dagania, the first of all, and still one of the greatest. Dagania, smelling sweet of new-cut hay, lush with the wonderful green of young wheat and barley. Dagania, with its lazy palms playing careless sonatas on the soft keyboard of the wind. Dagania, where sweat-streaked workers pause to throw you a smile and then lean forward to the earth. Listen. There was a time when this pastoral was gloom and danger, when the night stabbed death to lonely watchmen, and men plowed the fields with one hand guiding a mule and the other patting a gun. 10 men and 2 women came to the Jordan 27 years ago. They came with deep dreams and flowing hope and little else. For shelter, a mud brick hut that sucked in the rain and hoarded the heat. They shared danger and profit alike. Moshe Barsky, still to celebrate his 19th birthday, was one of these pioneers. Everybody loved Moshe. He was so warm to be with, so good to know. Moshe loved mules. Sounds funny, I know, but Moshe loved mules. That's that. And Moshe always said,
in case it should happen, I don't say it will, but in case sometimes I'm out alone plowing with my mule and robbers come up, they start shooting at me, what do I do? First thing, before even I shoot back, I unhitch the mule and send him back. It's what a man should do. You can always get another man, but a mule, that costs money.
The others smiled as they listened. Joseph Bustle with his everlasting pipe that was never lit. Aaron Gordon, who shoveled manure and wrote philosophy with equal talent. Yitzhak Ben Yaakov, plowman and pilot. They smiled at Moshe with tolerance and wise nods. Then one night, Moshe rode off to the village to fetch a doctor. Moshe always volunteered. It had to be Moshe. Midnight. And the watchman called,
up! Get up! Everybody up! Everybody! Quickly! Get up! Up!
What is it? What's the matter?
Moshe's mule. It's come back. And alone.
They found him on the road between Dagania and Milchamia, bleeding and clubbed.
The mule. The mule.
It came back.
Good. Good. You see, you can always get another man, but a mule. A mule. A mule.
So now there was a little mound of new-torn earth at Dagania, hot and baked dull brown. And a letter with sad news went to a village in Russia. In time, an answer came. Moshe's father wrote,
"Dear friends of Dagania, I have received your precious letter. I found there true words that had welled up from loving and faithful hearts, bound together by an eternal bond. The unexpected has befallen us. Great as is the disaster that has come upon us, you will not let your spirit fail you. On the contrary, may the memory of my son inspire you with still greater strength and courage to continue your labor until you attain the great ideal for which my son gave his life, the dream of Eretz Yisrael. It is not only to thank you for your sympathy with my grief that I write you, but also to send you words of comfort. For is not your grief my own? Come, therefore, and let us hope together that the blood of our precious victim, of my son and your comrade, Moshe, will be accepted, and that he be the last sacrifice upon the altar of our exalted ideal."
Thank you. Months later, on the dust-deep road that wound on from Tiberias, a small, thin figure walked swiftly. His pants were patched with the dirt of travel, and his eyes were tired. When he came to the watchman, he stopped and looked at the new-cut fields around him.
Is this Degania?
Yes. Who are you?
My name is Barsky.
Barsky?
Solomon Barsky. I'm Moshe's younger brother. My father sent me here to take his place.
Daganya, Kinnereth, Shar HaGolan, Afikim, tick off the names with reverence. These are the desert born, the man-made. These are the arms extended, the welcome calls. Gesher, Maoz, Ashtot Yaakov, green flame in the desert. Come, they say, come and see. What is done will be done again. There is room by the Jordan. There is wheat. Below Galilee, the Jordan digs deeper into the soil. No longer silver. Its sheen is gone now, and the stream is burnt brown and churning, like apple butter in the making. Whirlpools, rapids, water like emery scraping its shores, dragging rich topsoil into its turbulence. 6 miles below Daganya, the Jordan meets the Yarmouk and power. How long is the road from blind mules to kilocycles? How far the journey from Genesis to generators? Here it is, all nicely put together, a diorama of man's healthy dreams. The horn of the shepherd still sounds from the hilltops, but its counterpoint is the whine of high-tension lines, of electricity scudding across wires to clean barns and nurseries, and quiet rooms where scholars read. Fold down a corner of your memory at this point. Mark it well. For here is the promise of Eretz Yisrael. Power will emancipate the land. And there is a dream on foot, a plan. A man by name of Loudermilk came to Zion, and with a hypodermic of sharp facts and cold figures, syringed a dream into the blood of young men. He said,
I envisage a Jordan Valley Authority built along the lines of the TVA. It would have two basic purposes. Irrigation, power. The sweet water of the Upper Jordan would be channeled into irrigation canals that would extend along both sides of the Jordan Valley and the plain of Sharon to the Negev. Over 750,000 acres could be irrigated, reviving earth that has lain arid for centuries, and making it produce 2 or 3 crops a year. The salt waters of the Mediterranean, diverted through a 28-mile canal and tunnel starting near Mount Carmel, would pour down into the Dead Sea. Nearly 1 billion kilowatt-hours of cheap electric energy would finally be available in the Jordan Valley Authority. There is not a single engineering barrier to this project. It is sensible, feasible, and badly needed. It would be a demonstration of how the eroded lands of the entire Middle East could be restored to fertility.
And so, leaning on tilted drawing boards in Tel Aviv, under fluorescent lights in Jerusalem, the young engineers of Zion are tracing lines, computing stresses and strains, sketching, drafting, dreaming, believing, waiting, waiting. the humor of the river changes. The Jordan grows old now, and its way is wrinkled. This is the Zohar, the jungle of the Jordan. A pestilence, a green mire, a thick mucus growth dribbling down the shirt front of Zion. Enough of this place. We move on. On to where? Listen. The end now, the Dead Sea, the toenail of the Jordan. But look about you. These hills, are they familiar? Do you see them with the annoyance of having seen them all before, but not knowing when? We have been here before, all of us, for this is the point of decision. Moses led us here. Remember now. Remember? Now the wanderers rested. Their tent flaps licked the sweet breeze of pine-clad Gilead like the tongues of thirsty kittens. 40 years of wandering through the wilderness, and now, as seen from the heights, the promised land was a bare week's journey ahead. Only the valley of the Jordan was between. Ecstasy and the passion of homecoming blazed in many hearts. But there were some who drew away. There were some who dug their fingers into the earth and felt the fertility of the land in their palms. This was a good place. This was a good soil. This was a promise more certain than the promise of the book. And so the leaders of the tribes of Reuben, of Gad, and half of Manasseh came to Moses and pleaded.
Bring us not over the Jordan. Let us build sheepfolds for our flocks here and cities for our children.
And Moses replied,
shall your brethren go to war, and shall ye sit here? And wherefore do ye discourage the heart of the children of Israel from going over into the land which the Lord hath given to them?
This was the point of decision. Here, on these hills, the dream faltered, stumbled, then caught its balance and went on over the Jordan. Jordan, now, as then, is the symbol of the dream of Zion. Born at Dan, ends at Beersheba, living and ending within the geography of Palestine. This is no common river. This is not just another italic on a map, a trade route between there and there. This is the Jordan. Its waters are the fulsome springs of young Judea. This is the frontier of the promise. This is a promise beyond the recall of man, a haven, a refuge, granted by God's will. Come, it cries, come to Zion. Come, all you landless, all you tortured. Come from the bitter burial ground, the torn cities, the coldness of winter winds. Come to Zion. Cross over Jordan. Walk in the sun again. Smell the wheat. Read your books. Bear your children. Sing your songs. Come. Cross the Jordan.
Eternal Life drama today, The River Jordan, was written by Irv Tunick, with material drawn from the book entitled The River Jordan by Dr. Nelson Glick, president of Hebrew Union College, and marks the anniversary of the Balfour Declaration. The original music was arranged by Morris Mamorski and conducted by Milton Caton. Featured as narrator was Alexander Scourby. Cantor Robert H. Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Traditional melodies were sung by Hadassah Kohler. And the entire production was under the direction of Frank Papp. Free time has been given by the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations to present this program in cooperation with the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.